Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. And I welcome you. We are heard in 166 different countries and growing, all across the United States on stations, and we thank you and appreciate you taking the program. Our program is meant to empower people. Of course, we always start off with health and nutrition, as we will today. We're going to be talking about five ways to eat more choline. And if you don't know what choline is, it's vital to your nervous system, your liver health, and it prevents cancer. Three reasons you should eat more spicy foods. Fluoridated water can calcify arteries. That's a new major study. That's not good. And this organic oil could reduce DNA damage from eating GMOs, and a lot more on health and healing. Then I'll be sharing a commentary, my own, and a commentary from Chris Hedges from Truth Dig, becoming Hezbollah's Air Force. We'll talk about today history's largest trade agreements are being negotiated in secret. And this was an important article. I want to share it with you because it shows you how bad the not just the Trans-Pacific Partnership Treaty, but also the North Atlantic Free Trade Agreement is. But here's a larger question for this audience. If these treaties are meant to help people in the United States and Europe, why are we not allowed to know what's in them, who's negotiating them, and especially when a leaked chapter of this whole agreement from WikiLeaks shows that the intent is to control everything in a given country. And if something is fought at the state level, the federal level, we do not try it in any court. There is no jurisdiction by our Supreme Court, federal courts, local courts, city councils. No one has jurisdiction. It will be determined by lawyers working for profit corporations who are the final jurists, and there is no appeal. So as an example, if they want to bring in the most toxic pesticide in history, one that would never be allowed by our current standards of safety, we could not say no. We would have to allow it. If they want to open up our virgin forest and tear down all the trees for lumber, if they wanted to go into any community and put in a coal mine in any community in Manhattan, they could do it. There's not a damn thing anyone can tell you. And if anyone tells you otherwise, they're either ignorant of the facts or they're a part of the problem. So I want us to become very familiar with how bad these treaties are. We'll tell you who's actually negotiating them and why it is being done in secret. And I might mention, for all the good people in this audience who made the mistake of voting for the last president, he is one of the enablers of this whole project. He is allowing them to do this in secret. He knows exactly who's involved. He is complicit. Remember this when he's out of office, and there will be outrage at what this man and all of his predecessors and everyone else in the septic system we call Washington, D.C., have left behind for we the people. And then there's we the people who care, and there's we the people who could care about nothing. There are those people who wake up each day, and the only thing they care about is how they feel, what's good for them. They're completely detached from everything else in this world and everyone. There is absolutely nothing they do that represents a vestige of spiritual connection with anyone. And there are those people in this world who do care. And they're the ones who are out there sacrificing their time and energy to make a difference. We appreciate their efforts. I'll also be talking about the fake terror threat used to justify bombing Syria by Glenn Greenwald. So you see, we have a lot to share. All of this is about empowering us. Because even things that are hard to listen to or watch, if it tells us the truth of something that we wouldn't have otherwise known, that empowers us. For example, I'll tell you today about the endless march of police brutality. Keep in mind, we were the first radio program on radio anywhere in the United States to ring the bell that we had become a police state, completely fascistic. Right now, there is no difference whatsoever between the United States, its government, its agencies, its police forces, and Mussolini's black boot, black shirt fascist movement of the 1920s in Italy, or the Nazis in Germany in the 1930s, early 30s. And if you can't see that, then I can't help you. If you can see it, then we have to start showing it. Because remember, this couldn't exist if the Attorney General of the United States wasn't complicit by not stopping it, or the President. The President of the United States at any time could go into any community where there's been police brutality or racial profiling and stop it. He has the power by executive order and by presence. So much for what these people really believe and support. Let us begin. Almost no one ever talks about choline, C-H-O-L-I-N-E. But you should know about it. Why? Because it's an essential water-soluble nutrient. It's needed for the most quintessential functions of the body, especially for the liver and the nervous system to function properly. Now, while choline is not a vitamin in the strictest sense, it is usually grouped in as part of the B complex. And while this compound is created in small amounts in your liver, it is essential that you obtain even greater amounts by food. Now, it supports basic cellular structure, nutrient transport, metabolism. Liver metabolizes choline for use throughout the body. And here's what we know, the key benefits of choline in the body. It supports the structural integrity of the cell membranes. The older you get, the less integrity there is, and the greater likelihood is that your cells are not holding nutrients, are dying because of free radical damage. So you really need choline to protect your cells. It also synthesizes phospholipids, phosphatidylcholine, the important structural component of human cell membranes. Choline supports metabolism and a healthy liver function. Now, a lot of people in this country suffer from metabolic syndrome. That's a condition involving insulin resistance, elevated serum triglycerides, increased serum cholesterol, and obesity. Without sufficient protein from vegetable sources, lack of choline can also contribute to fatty deposits in the liver. And that is bad. You don't want a fatty liver. It supports your brain and nervous system health. Virtually everyone that I work with who has dementia, memory loss, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, ALS, I make sure that they have more than adequate choline every day, generally twice a day, once in the morning and once in the early evening, because it's crucial for their neurotransmitter, especially acetylcholine, which is involved in muscle function. So if you want to have better memory, have better muscle function, and continue to be able to learn, that's all involved with the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, need for choline. Choline can prevent cancer, and it's a great anti-inflammatory. It's terrific, especially when it comes to lowering levels of interleukin-6 and tumor necrosis alpha, factor alpha, and C-reactive protein. And C-reactive protein is really bad. When that's elevated, you run a high risk of having a heart attack or stroke. For all the young people listening, make sure your parents have C-reactive protein checked, because it's a marker we never check unless you're specifically having a heart problem, and then it's checked along with homocysteine. Because when that's elevated, you could have a heart attack or a stroke. And we can lower it. It's not difficult. Trimethylglycine, 1,000 milligrams, 1 milligram of methylated B12, 1 milligram of methylated folic acid, 200 milligrams of B6, and it just drops right down into normal. And that's where it should be. Also, choline is good for early growth and development. It's very important for brain development. And in fact, we want to make sure that we're getting it into the mother and into the young child. So get your choline. You can get it in lecithin, all right? But more often than not, it's important to get it in supplements or food. Now, nuts are a good source. Cruciferous vegetables are a good source. Legumes are a good source. So for those of us who are vegan and eat a plant-based diet, garbanzo beans, lima beans, lentils, you're getting about 70 milligrams of choline per cup. And make sure you soak your beans overnight so that the anti-nutrients drain away before consuming. It also cuts out the gas factor. Nuts, pumpkin seeds. By the way, pumpkin seeds are one of nature's really nutritional powerhouses. You can get more protein out of pumpkin seeds per dry weight than you can out of meat. So, you know, make sure you have a handful of pumpkin seeds. Almonds, sunflower seeds, you can get about 60 milligrams of choline. Cruciferous vegetables, cauliflower, cabbage, bok choy, broccoli, they're all good, about 65 milligrams per cup. And of course, if you juice those, even more. So that's our nutrient of the day, and hopefully that you'll make sure you get it into you each and every day. I don't like bland food. I grew up eating bland food, which is probably why I don't like it. I came from a house that everybody had to have 3 servings of dairy and 3 servings of meat a day and 3 servings of cereal grain, which is generally bread or potatoes. Needless to say, this was a horrible diet. And even though people in their 40s looked like they were 80, and they didn't exercise and they didn't take vitamin supplements, the only vitamin I ever remember anyone ever taking was iron. And that's because of a television program on Sunday night. What was it called? A Ted Mack Amateur Hour. And he promoted iron for anemia. So that was it. Nothing else did anyone ever take. Forget fruit. In the winter, in the spring, there was no fruit. In the summer, whatever was locally grown, that's what you had. Unless you had frozen food, which most people didn't. And so when they cooked, here's something for all the meat eaters in this audience, and the chicken eaters, and the fish eaters, and the pork eaters. If you think it's so good to eat these things, how about eating them this way? I have no problem eating an apple. I have no problem without anything. No problem eating watermelon. No problem eating a mango. Have no problem eating a red pepper or a piece of celery. Why don't you eat that meat raw? Now, of course, there were worms in it. You could get tapeworms and you could die. But if you really think it's good, eat it raw. If not, cook it. But don't use any salt or pepper or any of the sauces you normally get it smothered on. And don't put it on a bun with everything else that disguises the taste. No, hot dog, same way. Just eat the hot dog. But they got to make the hot dog without any of the spices in it. Just plain, when you look at it, looks like gray putty. Eat that. Just sit down to a big plate of what looks like gray putty. See how you like the taste of chicken that has not been defried, not had monosodium glutamate in it, not had any of those dippings, not been breaded. Just plain chicken. Well, you see that very few people, some would, but the vast majority would not. So there's one way to enhance the food we eat, and that's with spices. Spices are wonderful if you know how to use them. And the best way to have spices is to grow them yourself. It's easy. You simply take a tray, get organic soil, and then sprout overnight by putting some seeds, whatever seeds you want to sprout, into a jar, like a mason jar, and you soak it. And then in the morning, you soak it again. You soak it and rinse it. First night, you soak it and just leave it soaked, and then it germinates. Then you rinse. Then you put it in the soil. You broadcast it. Now, suddenly you can have every kind of imaginable culinary herb. Now, I like to have a rack, and in my home, when I'm there, I have a giant 6-foot by 6-foot rack, and I frequently have 2 of them. And I might have 20 different culinary herbs growing. So I just cut some lemon basil, I'll cut some cinnamon basil, I'll cut some oregano, thyme, rosemary, mints, peppermint, spearmint, whatever you want. But it's fresh. You don't have to buy those little herbs in a, that have no smell or taste to them that last about a day in the little packages. This way you're growing your own seasonings. And of course, those of you who want to be on a low-salt diet, make sure you're eating Himalayan pink sea salt. It's much better for you than any other salt. But lemon juice and lime juice combined with apple cider vinegar spritzed onto a salad, you think you have salt in the salad. You don't. Same thing with a baked potato. Lots of black pepper, which is very healing. Red pepper, which is healing. Stuff that potato with some, let's say, some oyster mushrooms, which are very powerful. Lightly sauteed, very lightly. Garlic, onions. And then combine equal parts lemon and lime juice and spread on your potato. You think you have salt on your potato. You don't. So it's great for people who want to keep their blood pressure down, don't want high sodium in the diet. Now, one of the most remarkable spices we can take in is some chili peppers. Now, when I'm at home, I go out to a place called Immokalee. It's the last town before the Everglades. And there, the local community grows more types of peppers than any place I've seen in the United States. They might have 100 different varieties. And each one they know based upon how hot it is and its unique flavor. And they use this. And you got to get used to it, because otherwise even mild to them would be very hot to you. But you can develop over a period of time. And the active ingredient in all these is called capsaicin. Cap, C-A-P, S-A-S-A-S-N, I-C-I-N. And it's used in Asia, India, Central and South Americas. And it brings the spice of the food, especially when they're using a little bit of it and a different one in each dish. Americans want to get rid of their pain today, and their joints are using creams that actually have the chili pepper active ingredient, which is the capsaicin in it. But when you eat the chili pepper, when you eat the cayenne pepper, you're actually helping your blood. You're helping prevent strokes. You're turning off pain in your joints. You're turning off pain in your muscles. You're helping prevent or reverse headaches just with this. So this is what allows a lot of zest and really cause a kind of a little sparkler to go off in your mouth, whatever food you're eating. And also it's reducing the risk of tumors. It's been shown to activate cell receptors in your intestine lining, creating a reaction that lowers the risk of tumors. And it's antioxidant, it's anti-inflammatory, and it makes you feel hot, but it's actually causing your body to be cooled because it's causing perspiration. And finally, from our health segment today, I remember years ago when I first interviewed in Washington, D.C., a scientist, Dr. Dean Burke. He was one of the founders of the National Cancer Institute, one of its senior and most respected scientists. He had finished a study showing that about 15,000 to 20,000 excess cancer deaths occur each year from fluoride in the water. Dr. John Yamianis worked with him to popularize this. And from that, I did my first radio program on fluoride being dangerous. Over the years, I've done dozens of programs on fluoride. I've written many articles, and there was a place on my website where it showed communities that used the article that I had written to show the scientific rationale for not fluoridating. And there were all over the world people using it. We keep updating the article. Please go and read the fluoride fiasco. It is up to date, and you could take it into any court of law in the United States, and the scholarship in it will be able to withstand cross-examination. So for those of you who want to get the fluoride out of your water, use it. Here is the latest. Why we should not be drinking fluoridated water anywhere. From Sayer G., Green Med Info, quote, fluoridated water can calcify arteries. Quote, fluoride is put into your drinking water for your teeth without your consent. But did you know that this could also calcify your arteries? A few years ago, we reported on a study evaluating a new diagnostic technology that inadvertently revealed a link between fluoride exposure and coronary artery disease. Our report stirred up quite a lot of controversy and criticism, even leading one of the most respected figures in alternative medicine, Dr. Russell Blaylock, to call us out on for allegedly misinterpreting the following article, quote, association of vascular fluoride uptake with vascular calcification and coronary artery disease. As one can see, the study's results revealed a hitherto largely unknown connection between fluoride exposure, coronary artery disease, and cardiovascular events, meaning a heart attack. Quote, there was significant correlation between history of cardiovascular events, that means heart attacks, and presence of fluoride uptake in coronary arteries. The coronary fluoride uptake value in patients with cardiovascular events, heart attacks, was significantly higher in patients without cardiovascular events. The argument at the time was the study was simply about a new diagnostic technique and shouldn't be read into, and that presumably the increased fluoride uptake value observed in patients with a higher frequency of cardiovascular events was an effect of the heart disease itself and not in any way indicative of fluoride's causative role, despite the fact that fluoride's cardiotoxicity had already been consistently demonstrated in biomedical literature. Now, a provocative new study published in the journal Toxicology not only provides some vindication for our previous interpretations, but also raises serious concerns over the cardiovascular complications associated with water fluoridation practices, showing for the first time that despite exhibiting an anti-calcification effect in vitro, meaning cell model, fluoride exposure at levels found in people who drink fluoridated water exhibits artery calcifying effects in the more important vivo, VIVO, which means animal or human model. The article is entitled Effects of Water Fluoridation on the Development of Vascular Calcification in Uremic Rats. The study opens up a description of the common medical justification for public drinking about preventing tooth decay. And it says, quote, more than 90% of ingested fluoride is absorbed through the intestine, quickly distributed between plasma, soft tissues, and calcified structures, where it can be sequestered for years. When water is fluoridated at the World Health Organization recommended levels, the range of plasma fluoride concentration is usually 1 to 6 UM. And it says fluoride is not under homeostatic control, and it is cleared from the plasma within a few hours by the complementary action of calcified tissue in the kidneys, end quote. Those with chronic kidney disease have a harder time clearing the fluoride, which results in increased blood plasma levels, especially as the length of exposure increases. So this is what it says. And anyway, it goes on and on talking about why it's bad. So for those who held out that fluoride was dangerous, you are right. The science is on our side. All of it. All of the independent science shows that fluoride is bad. It destroys your immune system. It can cause cancer. Dr. Dean Burke 40 years ago got it right. So don't drink fluoridated beverages. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. And we have a lot to say about this. We're going to be back in a moment. Please stay with us.
take the end of all time. Someone to understand you like I do. You'll never find the rhythm, the rhyme, all the magic we shared, just us two.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. I'm sure many of the people in this audience are concerned about why we are going into Syria to bomb it and to destroy this new evil that we've been told exists. But at what point do we stop trusting in the propaganda and look at more honest, independent research that gives us a better perspective? Those who use violence to shape the world, as we have done in the Middle East, unleash a whirlwind. Our initial alliances, achieved at the cost of what? Hundreds of thousands of dead? Over $3 to $5 trillion in expenditures and the ravaging of infrastructure across the region have been turned upside down by the cataclysm of violence. 13 years of war and the rise of enemies we did not expect have transformed Hezbollah fighters into Syria, inside Syria, along with their Iran, into our tacit allies. We are intervening in the Syrian war to assist a regime we sought to overthrow. What would take its place? So let's say that we go ahead and we bomb all of Syria and we destroy the president of Syria. Are the moderate terrorists going to take the place of the current regime? What comes from that? Have we paid no attention to what came from Libya? Because then you would have the reproduction of Libya now again in Syria. We promised to save Iraq, and now we're helping to dismember it. We have delivered Afghanistan to drug cartels and warlords who preside over a ruin of a nation where 60% of the children are malnourished and the Taliban is poised to take power once NATO troops depart, even with the new signing of this new treaty. The entire misguided enterprise has been a fiasco of gross mismanagement and wanton bloodletting, but that does not mean it will be stopped. More violence is not going to rectify the damage. Indeed, it will make it worse. But violence is all we know. Violence is the habitual response by the state to every dilemma. War, like much modern bureaucracy, has become an impersonal and unquestioned mechanism to perpetuate American power. It has its own internal momentum. There may be a few courageous souls who rise up within the apparatus to protest war's ultimate absurdity, but they are rapidly discarded and replaced. The state rages like an insane King Lear. And what did he say? Kill, 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 and kill. That is the mantra chanted with every new setback in the Middle East. How many times have we rejoiced at the murder of those we demonized? Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and dozens of others. As soon as one hunt for the fountainhead of evil ends, another begins. Those who kill are swiftly replaced. Fresh terrorist groups take the place of the old. The Khorasan group, the U.S. government assures us, is a more sinister and deadlier version of the Islamic State of Iraq and Greater Syria, which was once touted as a more sinister version of Al-Qaeda. We cannot extinguish our enemies. They spring out of the ground like the legion of hostile warriors that rose up when Cadmus sowed his dragon's teeth. Our violence spawns violence and never-ending configurations of enraged militants. We will keep spawning them until we stop occupying the Middle East. Endless war, which results in endless terror, leaves the arms manufacturers and the generals giddy with joy. It is a boon to the state, which is possessed with an excuse to extinguish what few liberties we have left. It fuels the militancy and hatred that fanatics need to justify their slaughter and attract recruits. But it is a curse to humankind. The barbarism of modern industrial warfare creates complex bureaucratic mechanisms that exist to perpetuate and manufacture death. We are hostages to those mechanisms. The soul that is enslaved to war cries out for deliverance, Simon will observe, but deliverance itself appears to it an extreme and tragic aspect, the aspect of destruction. Thus, war effaces all conceptions of purpose or goal, including even its own war aims, she wrote. It effaces the very notion of wars being brought to an end. Consequently, nobody does anything to bring this end about. In the presence of an armed enemy, what hand can relinquish its weapon? The mind ought to find out. But the mind has lost all capacity to so much as look outward. The mind is completely absorbed in doing its self-violence. Always in human life, whether war or slavery is in question, intolerable sufferings continue, as it were, by the force of their own specific gravity, and so look to the outer as though they deprive the sufferer of the resources which might serve to extricate them, end quote. Violence as a primary form of communication has become normalized. It is not politics by other means. It is politics. Democrats are as infected as Republicans. The war machine is impervious to election cycles. It bombs, kills, maims, tortures, terrorizes, and destroys as if on autopilot. It dispenses with humans around the globe as if they were just insects. No one dares lift a finger of his or her voice to protest against a war policy that is visibly bankrupting the United States, has no hope of success, and is going to end with new terrorist attacks on American soil. We have surrendered our political agency and our role as citizens to the masters of war. Kierkegaard said in The Present Age, he warned that the modern state seeks to eradicate conscience and absorb individuals into a public that can be shaped and manipulated by those in power. This public is not real. It is, as Kierkegaard wrote, a monstrous abstraction on all embracing something which is nothing, a mirage. In short, we became part of a herd. Unreal individuals who are never there, are never united, but can be united in any actual situation or organization, and yet are held together as a whole. How abstract is that? Those who question the public, those who denounce endless war, are dismissed as dreamers or freaks. But only they, according to the Greek definition of the polis, can be considered citizens. In endless war, it does not matter whom we fight. Endless war is not about winning battles or promoting a cause. It is an end to itself. In George Orwell's novel, 1984, Oceania is at war with Eurasia and allied with the Eustasia. And the alliance then suddenly is reversed, and one becomes an ally of the other. And that was friend is now enemy. The point is not who is being fought. The point is maintaining a state of fear and the mass mobilization of the public. War and national security are used to justify the surrender of citizenship, the crushing of dissent, the expanding of powers of the state. The point of war is itself. And if the American state, once a sworn enemy of Hezbollah, gives air cover to Hezbollah fighters in Syria, the goals of endless war remain gloriously untouched. In conclusion, by endless war, it is not sustainable. States that wage endless war inevitably collapse. They drain their treasuries, are hated by the wretched of the earth, and militarize and strangle their political, social, and cultural life while impoverishing and repressing their populations. They are seduced by what Sigmund Freud called the death instinct. This is where we are being led. The only question is when it will unravel. From Chris Hedges. In studio in New York City, we have a young person. She is 20 years of age. Rachel, nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Rachel, you were concerned about global warming on your radio program, and you've had a show here for what, 4 years?
Yeah.
4 years.
It's been a while.
Yeah, when you were 16. Trachtenberg is her last name. One day I came up and there was MTV. They had a whole crew here filming you.
Yeah, I'm a musician, so always doing crazy stuff like that.
What I like about your show is that you blend important world and social events, concern for the ecology, emphasis upon vegan eating and animal rights, the health of the human body by being conscious of what you take in. And you have a young audience, need to say. But for every broadcast that you're giving your message, you're also impacting people, because we also see the flood of emails that you get and how your audience expands. Here's my question for you. A week ago Sunday in Central Park, about 300,000 to 400,000 people met to challenge the inertia and hubris of governments around the world, but specifically ours, of not doing things that are concrete when it comes to the environment. Mm-hmm. It was a day of environmental consciousness. We had about 2,100 of my listeners who were there. We went at the back of the march and distributed documentaries on genetic engineering and why that's important to global warming and to helping the environment on all levels. And yet, when I'm walking through the march, I saw thousands of people eating hamburgers, drinking colas, smoking cigarettes. They were not healthy. And I'm thinking, what part of environmental consciousness did you miss?
Yeah.
I didn't see the sponsors bringing any young people forward and promoting them and their causes. I was very disappointed in that. But I believe that the environmental movements that are going to make a difference in the future are going to be led by young people like yourself. Mm-hmm. My group, the baby boomers, with a few exceptions, they sold out. And they were there. They're getting tens of millions of dollars a year from the very polluters that they should be challenging. And you don't see their massive mailing lists showing up to protest and get arrested. Tell us now what you believe that march lacked, but also what we need to understand should be emphasized to help not just global warming, but every aspect of the environment.
Yeah. I mean, in my mind, I feel like animal rights is a very basic thing, and I think that in mainstream media, it's not taken very seriously. And all the coverage I saw in the march, there were a lot of people that physically looked unhealthy. And yes, I'm judging them on their appearance and not on their mental state, but body types. There were a lot of, say, overweight people or just out of shape. And in my mind, a vegan diet is the answer to not only feeling good, but taking extreme suffering out of this world, which I think can lead to just overall happiness for everyone, and also the amount of energy and resources that it takes to get, say, that hamburger or even that cola to whoever was eating it is immense and beyond even my understanding. And to think about all the processes of the cruelty and environmentally on what it takes to raise the animals and all of that, and then what it does to you, I feel like that, for me, was something that lacked from the march. I wasn't able to be there, but my mother said there were some vegan signs and stuff, but from coverage, it didn't seem as much as I would have hoped.
I was hoping that there would have been a large group of young people. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm going to offer you, a challenge. Are you up for a challenge?
Yes.
Let's do this one right. That was just a celebration. with some serious people and serious notions and small groups of people, but they were neglected. Mm-hmm. If you want to have a march, have it with a purpose where you have an outcome, where you can actually get something done.
Yeah.
Why don't you organize all the young people in the United States to have a youth march to save the environment, specifically on animal rights, veganism, with all the details that if you became a vegan, you're then not supporting about 18% of all global warming emissions. Methane is more toxic to the environment than CO2. You're also then emphasizing more diverse crops growing locally, organic. You're helping to stop the acidification of the waters and the ocean, the destruction of soil, soil erosion, which leads to dust storms that we now have throughout the United States, reminiscent of the 1930s. Every single study shows that the more that you consume a healthy plant-based diet and the less of an animal-based diet, the longer you live, the healthier your heart, less cancer. And that way, something good can come from it. Yeah. Otherwise, I hate to say this, but I think it's necessary to be said. I've been around long enough, been enough demonstrations, led enough demonstrations to know unless you have something very specific, it's just a celebration.
Yeah.
And nothing changes. Everything goes back and everybody
feels
good.
It brings attention, but it's not... Yeah, what was the action of it? It was the largest march regarding the environment, and I think that is.
But it was not
powerful.
The most effective march.
No. Yeah, to think of all the trash cans filled with stuff, and I mean,
think of all the fast food joints that got more money that morning.
Yeah.
Willing to take that challenge?
I am willing to take that challenge.
Good.
I think it will be a hard one, sadly, but I think it's one that's worth it.
Are you in college?
No, I decided not to go to college.
Okay.
I'm college age, though.
Good. Well, that may be one of the smartest choices of your life, based upon the false notion of going to college to become a part of the American dream. If you watch the shows, they're angry right now because not enough young people graduating from college are buying homes and investing in what goes into a home, furniture, you know, fabrics, carpets, bedspreads. Appliances, all those industries have been affected. And yet we sit now with enough empty homes in America, vacated homes, foreclosed homes, that every homeless person in America could have three homes. And yet no one has chosen to help the people who have no homes, who were thrown out of their homes. It's just a new market for renting out at high prices people's homes. And that part of that is because they have so much student debt, they can't afford a home. But instead of getting rid of the student debt and having universal health care and having universal education, unless you want a private one, in which case you have a right to, you know, pay to go to a private school. But you should not be not afforded an education because you can't afford one. In any civilized society where you actually have civil thought, you don't bankrupt someone because they got sick, nor do you deprive someone because they cannot afford an education. Shows you how far back on the primordial scale we have de-evolved. So that's your challenge. All right?
Take it.
I will work with you. I will give you all the science you need to show every aspect. Plus, I have my new feature film, which I haven't yet spoken about or released on show on this. We give out thousands and thousands and thousands of, you know, the seeds of death to educate people about GMOs.
Yeah.
Give them something they can go home with. They can say, I didn't know this. I'm not going to buy this food if it's genetically modified. I didn't know I could get sick. You got to give people something that actually begins their journey other than just hoorah, rah. Good. Do you know that the two largest marches that dwarfed this march, dwarfed it, that had over 3.5 million supporters were by two teenagers, one 14-year-old, one 16-year-old?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you know that they were fighting to help the young girls and young boys in India that were making the bricks, the boys making the bricks, the girls doing the weaving that were being exploited? They had 3.5 and 4 million people.
Wow.
You see?
It's what matters is educating yourself and no matter what age you are, feeling empowered enough to know that you can make a difference.
You're right. And Rachel, it's also that your generation has not yet been corrupted. My generation's fully corrupted. The moment you gain power, the moment you gain success, the moment you gain an opportunity, more often than not, 95% of people will allow themselves to be compromised for their own needs and our environmental movement has been totally, completely compromised.
Yep.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Gary Nall. Now on to some other issues. You know what we're going to do? We're going to take a break and come back and play a few minutes from Professor Campbell. T. Colin Campbell is quite simply one of the most remarkable scientists, public health scientists in America from Cornell. And he was the one who did the China study. And we have a short clip of him. We'll only play about 3 minutes and I'll interpret the rest. About dairy and being a major cause of disease, specifically something in dairy that causes disease that nobody knew about, and why he supports veganism. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. There is a movie I saw this week called Pride. I highly recommend it. It's an unusual group of people, some Welsh miners. True story. In 1985, 84, they went out on strike because of poor conditions. The Thatcher government really hammered them hard, and they turned off their gas in the middle of the winter, and they were eating white bread. And a small group, only about 12 gays in London, decided to have a little fundraiser out on the front of their building for them. There was one lesbian, the others men, and they raised a few bucks. They met, and it was a very interesting how they met. Really hardline heterosexuals, me, who were very homophobic, meeting with the gays. But that handshake that they had is about the whole film. I highly recommend it. Showing how people who have been repressed and hated and vilified the gay population, how they came to join to help the miners. Wonderful, inspiring story. Highly recommend it. It's at 68th Street in Manhattan. Just a quick comment on, I don't know if he'll find the Colin Campbell clip, but we'll do it tomorrow, if not today. This is from history's largest trade agreements are being negotiated in secret from Alvera Guzman Bastida. And it says, unelected representatives iron out logistics of massive TPP and TTIP deals between U.S. and Europe. And it goes on to talk about how in 2007, in August, then-President candidate Barack Obama vowed that if elected, he would, quote, immediately amend the North Atlantic Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, which the U.S. signed with Mexico 13 years earlier. Quote, our trade agreement should not be just good for Wall Street. It should also be good for Main Street, end quote, he said, objecting to the influence of corporate lobbyists over labor unions and other groups negotiating trade agreements. 6 years later, with NAFTA still untouched, Obama faced the decision to appoint the chief U.S. negotiators for the two largest trade agreements in history, and he picked two Wall Street bankers. Michael Froman, the current U.S. trade representative, received over $4 million from his previous employer, Citigroup, when he joined the government, and Stefan Selig, the Undersecretary of Commerce for International Trade and a former Bank of America banker, received $14 million in bonus pay when he left his old job. And they're the ones, two Wall Street bankers, selling out the world, selling out Americans, destroying unions. It will destroy every union in America. We should be protesting this. We should all be protesting it. And I believe the protest should be led by the unions. I believe that they are the ones who have the greatest risk here as a group losing their jobs, because this is a scorched earth treaty. If either of these two treaties are signed, America as we know it will cease to exist. We will be nothing more than a corporate asset. Remember what I'm saying. Now let's see all the unions come together and go on general strike. Close down every damn thing in America you're associated with. Close it down. Close down the trucks, the food, the medicines. Close down the hospitals. Close down everything until these two treaties are torn up and thrown away. And if you don't, then watch what happens, because these guys are merciless. And what tiny fraction of Americans feel that there is some protection, all that'll be wiped away. Let's see if they have the common sense and the fight and will to stand up to this corruption, or have the heads of these unions been compromised. In studio, Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I got an email here. I don't have a name attached to it, but this has to do with music. And I'm really glad someone asked this question. They're asking, what is your favorite music? And is it the stuff that you're playing on the show?
No. I love two types of music. I love disco for dancing. I love soul music for its originality and its rhythm and how I feel listening. But when I'm at home and here in the office, I listen to a different music. Music I never play, because I don't believe a whole lot of people would like it. I like it because it's a feel-good inspirational music. Hold on. Giselle, our engineer, you know the music I listen to? Do you have any cut there you could just put on? I'll listen to what I listen to.
All right.
And then see if you feel anything. Huh? No, the one I was listening to earlier today. Ask Jason. You got something? Can you put something on? Listen, this is what I like. This is my favorite music from as a kid till now. Gospel. That's my favorite.
Can I have an amen?
Yes. That's what I listen to.
Well,
that inspires me.
Very good. That answers that question.
Now tell me, did that make you feel good, listen to that?
Sure did.
Yeah. I like music that brings the spirit out. touches us. Mm-hmm. Gospel does it.
Jesus, yes.
We want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. And just remember, write down this number, because if you're ever any place and you want to listen to this show and it's time and you're not near a computer or land base station, just call and listen over the telephone. 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. I want to thank you for listening. And tonight, 7 o'clock, powerful hour coming up. We're going to have two of the world's leading experts talk about what the U.S.'s real agenda in the Middle East is, and why is the U.S. and its allies, including Israel, supporting radical Islamic terrorist organizations to orchestrate regime change in the region. 7 o'clock tonight on the Progressive Radio Network. Thank you for listening. Okay. And in the studio again is Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
I'm back. So I also have an email here, and I'm assuming that you remember the Funk Brothers.
Oh, yes.
From Detroit. Apparently, they must have some medical problems. They're looking for some help, and one of the listeners asked, would you be able to help them?
I would certainly help the Funk Brothers. In fact, I would help any of the Motown singers. They gave us so much. And they weren't given a whole lot. The Funk Brothers weren't given, to my knowledge, they weren't given residuals. Even though they were the backup, they did the composition, they frequently did the writing of the music, and they played all that music for everyone, whether Stevie Wonder or Diana Ross or Smokey Robinson or The Temptations, great group, The Temptations. Probably the greatest group out of Motown. But look how many of them died young.
Yes.
Look how many went out on drugs. Look how many went out on alcohol. So what you're seeing today is you're seeing an awful lot of these people who their careers have long passed, but they're still here, and a lot of them are sick. What I'm willing to do is if there's anyone from Motown, anyone who was who helped contribute to our cultural appreciation of that unique music, I'd be happy to help them. Help detoxify them. It'll be free. All they have to do is just, they can contact you. You can speak with them. All right?
Okay.
And I'll get them protocols. Help them. Okay. Give me your number.
It's 631-504-6198. Again, 631-504-6198.
I just think sometimes, what if Marvin Gaye had not been killed by his father? What if all the people who died had had a different approach to life? What if there was someone there to develop their character and spiritual values along with the talents they had? They'd still be alive and still creating. But we focus upon the success, the money, and fame it brings. We don't focus upon that as an opportunity to grow. And that's the dark side of success. But it's not too late to help those people. And we're here to help them.
That's great.
I'm also going to be helping the people of Detroit. We have thousands of listeners right now in Detroit. The bankruptcy judge says you have no right to water. And
you're kidding.
No. They have no right to water. It's not a human right. And that's a bad precedent. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to get you tankers of water. If you live in Detroit area and you're listening now, contact Lou Ann. Let's start some food water cooperatives. And you start the cooperative on your end, and I'll try to get you water on my end. Okay? So we'll fight back using positive solutions. Okay? Let's say hello to Utrecht Lead. Hi, Utrecht.
Hello, Gary. Hi, Luann. Today we asked a question, are we at war or not at war? The answer is sort of, kind of.
Maybe, possibly.
Possibly, definitely, maybe.
All right. We're in. We're looking forward to it, Utrecht Lead. And by the way, when are you coming to New York, Utrecht?
The middle of the month, of October.
Oh, great, because we got people standing outside the audience office right now waiting on you.
I'll be up there.
All right. We got to give them umbrellas now. Utrece Lead, she's coming, and we're going to have her on, and she's going to be doing a series of lectures, and that'll be terrific. She's coming at you right now.
Gary Knoll Show's executive producer is Richard Gale. Our program director is Jason Taubenfeld. The archive team is Sharon Pride and Casey Holford. And our head engineer is Giselle Hernandez. You can download past programs by visiting our archives at prn.fm.
I'm proud to be a part of the Progressive Radio Network and have been for more than 12 years. We have more than 85 outstanding minds that host programs. We are the cutting edge of independent critical thinking. Now, we've never had to have fundraisers, as you've heard on Pacifica WBAI or NPR or PBS. Instead, the hosts have been able to have their shows free of any interference. However, the past few years is becoming increasingly difficult, and the time has come to ask for your support. I would appreciate it if you would be a friend at PRN and commit to a monthly reoccurring donation. Now, it might be $20, $50, $75, $100, whatever you can afford. This will ensure that the Progressive Radio Network will be able to continue to bring you the latest breaking stories, the most important topics, empowering you on the discussions from a progressive point of view. Just go on PRN's homepage and click on the subscribe button. With each subscription, you'll receive a free DVD of mine from our library. Thank you very much for your support.